Good morning, and thanks for downloading and listening. You've queued up an audio edition of Offbeat Oregon Du Jour, a daily RSS podcast feed brought to you by the Offbeat Oregon History Weekly newspaper column. Each day we bring you a new story from our archives, stories of heroes and rascals, of shipwrecks and lost gold, of Shanghai sailors and Skid Road bordellos and pirates and robbers and unsolved mysteries, and all kinds of other great stuff. And to get these delivered regularly, daily, directly to your podcatcher, direct your podcatcher to ofor.us/p. These podcasts are proudly simple. No bumper music, no audio assets, no nothing. Just me reading the column to you and occasionally throwing in a comment or two. My goal is to make it possible for you to read the columns without reading the columns, if that makes any sense. I have to also announce that if these podcasts were a movie, they would be rated PG. Just like the Offbeat Oregon History newspaper column, PG would be their rating. Most people will find them suitable for family listening. There will be no F-bombs gratuitously dropped or anything like that. Today's column was first published on December 13th, 2010. Its headline, America's First Rest Area Had Marble Walls and Highlights Nation's Oldest Scenic Highway. The overview. Legendary Crown Point Vista House looks out over Columbia Gorge and was the highlight of a highway built when road building was as much an art as a science. Okay, here is the article. The nation's first publicly owned rest area perches on the brow of a bluff just outside Corbett, Oregon, overlooking the most spectacular section of the Columbia River Gorge. It's called Crown Point Vista House, and it's the jumping-off point for America's oldest scenic highway, the Columbia River Highway. The Vista House is rather more than just a rest area. For starters, the bathrooms are finished in marble and mahogany. It was designed by a German architect and built of cut sandstone that cost, in today's dollars, roughly $2 million. But then, the Columbia River Highway is more than just a road. Today, most people know this road as an old and scenic byway, peppered with picturesque old bridges and tunnels and bejeweled with waterfalls and panoramic views, but often clotted with motorhomes. It's hard to think of this, but in 1915, when construction started on this road, Western Oregon might as well have been across an ocean from the rest of the nation for half the year. Steamboats plied the Columbia River and could take passengers to the Dalles, but passage wasn't cheap, and the river, untamed as yet by hydroelectric dams, was far from the broad, placid waterway we think of today. Likewise, railroads ran up the gorge, but these weren't cheap either, nor did they stop so passengers could look at waterfalls and picnic on river beaches along the way. Your other option for getting out east was to hitch up a wagon and a team of oxen, not an automobile, they didn't have the traction, and set out on the famous Barlow Trail, or head south to Springfield and over Mackenzie Pass, just not in the winter or early spring when the passes were covered in yards-thick layers of snow. Enter philanthropist Samuel Hill. Hill had dreamed of a scenic route through the gorge for some time, and by about 1913 the stars were beginning to line up. First of all, the wealthy swells in Portland had bought themselves automobiles and were finding their usefulness frustratingly limited by the crude, muddy roads of the day. Many of these oofy motorists were willing, like Hill, to put their money and social influence behind a highway project that would give them a place to take their Buicks and Maxwells for Sunday drives and leisurely picnics, and to show off the unique qualities of what was still a pretty rough-hewn frontier city to upper-crust visitors from back east. Increasingly, thanks to Henry Ford's cheap iron, the less wealthy were joining them on those roads, and popular pressure to do something about the problem was building. For help with his plan, Hill hired, at his own expense, legendary road builder Samuel Lancaster as engineer. Soon, following the election of some road-friendly county commissioners, the project got a green light. Lancaster scouted a route that threaded past waterfalls and scenic spots like the string in a pearl necklace. His highway would be specially oriented to frame picturesque vistas here and there, and would be carried over gullies and across sheer cliff faces on picturesque concrete bridges and causeways. Everywhere possible, drop-offs would be protected by a rustic stony guardrail made by the same Italian masons who built the foundation for the Vista House to stop cars from tumbling over the edge. Portland Swells bought up property along the way. Waterfalls, stony outcroppings, picturesque viewpoints to serve as parks. Of course, they bought some for themselves, too. Portland's elite helped in other ways, too. C. Lester Horn tells of one recalcitrant landowner, whom he is careful not to identify by name, who had vowed to fight condemnation proceedings to keep the highway from coming through his land. The landowner was a Portland businessman, and one of his major customers was the Benson Hotel, then the nicest in Portland. Simon Benson, when he heard, called him on the telephone personally. Could he please send a messenger over to pick up an urgent letter? The landowner could, of course. But when the messenger returned, the letter he brought was a cancellation of all business from the Benson Hotel. So he, in turn, got on the phone to Benson. Could Benson please send a bellhop over to pick up an urgent reply? Benson could, of course. And when the bellhop returned, what he brought was a signed and notarized easement allowing the highway to pass through the property. Benson also, famously, paid for the footbridge that crosses near the bottom of Multnomah Falls. While chatting with Lancaster, the engineer, about how nice it would be to have a bridge there, Benson asked casually what it might cost to do so. When Benson came up with a figure, Benson came up with a checkbook, and there, on the spot, paid for it. $10,000. It might cost a little bit more to build that today. In the end, Lancaster's road came to be far more successful than he and Hill had ever dreamed. In fact, it quickly became a victim of that success as it grew choked with heavy commercial traffic that caused noticeable deterioration. By then, the aesthetic qualities that had motivated the Portland aristocrats to finance the road so generously were mostly gone from American road building. People just wanted to get somewhere fast, not dawdle along an unnecessarily long detour and gawk at the same waterfall they'd passed every day for 5 years on the way to work. So, starting in the late 1930s, newer and more bland roadways, mostly running along the river near water level, started replacing segments of the road. Finally, with the construction of Interstate 584 in the early 1960s, the highway was fully freed to return to the use that Portland plutocrats originally envisioned, as the string in a scenic pearl necklace. And yes, except for occasional closures for remodeling and maintenance, the Crown Point Vista House rest area has been in service this entire time. That's it for today. You just heard America's first rest area had marble walls, highlights nation's oldest scenic highway, by Finn J.D. John. That's me. First published on December 13th, 2010. If you'd like to see the art for this story, of which there is rather a lot, lots of old postcards from the 1910s and 1920s, colorized, hand-tinted ones, or if you'd like to print out a copy for your friends, look it up online. Go to www.offbeatoregon.com. The articles there are arranged, listed in order of the date they were published, so just look for the December 2010 articles. You'll see it immediately. That covers us until tomorrow, when we will be uploading a story on Depot Bay, the world's smallest harbor, which used to be even smaller. Actually, Depot Bay's entrance used to be 30 feet wide, and considering the average fishing boat is probably 15 feet wide, it's hard to imagine how those guys got their boats in. Oldest privately owned aquarium, wonderful place to go storm watching, really kind of a touristy sort of column, but it's an interesting one, and I hope you'll tune in and check it out. So look for it after about 6 a.m., and I hope to catch you then. Thanks for listening.